Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 290 for comics originally released on February 27th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Talon number 5. Now, Bob, you started with the first issue of this, and then, or the zero issue, or wherever. I guess it started on the first issue, and then dropped it, or what's your background on this?
I did not buy this at all. I saw some issues. I saw, like, the 0, 1, and 2 issue available in a online shop that I prowl around at for a buck a piece, so I bought 0, 1, and 2, and I read them, and I liked it. I thought it was a pretty good series. So I picked up issue 3 at the comic shop, and then when we decided we were going to talk about this issue, I picked up number 4 at the comic shop and number 5. So I've read all the issues at this point.
All right, cool. I've been getting it since it came out, and I think it's a fun series. I think it's very enjoyable. It fits in with the Batman books, but I like how it has a bit of a different feel to it. With this guy being an escape artist, that gives it a little bit of a uniqueness there. But what I think really sets the series apart from the other Batman family titles is it's got kind of that chess match between this Talon, Calvin Rose, and the Court of Owls. And, you know, Calvin's got his own little support group or whatever, and of course the Court of Owls has, you know, all these other Talons they can throw at him and stuff like that, and it gives it a very clear, you know, what's the main conflict and stuff. It's something that very much is coming out of the recent Batman, you know, mythology and stuff they've been building. Yet, you know, can also kind of stand on its own as it needs to.
And my biggest thing is I like the storyline, and I really like, well, I mean, I like the storyline with one reservation, which we'll talk about in a second. And I really like Gillum March, or James Tynion, rather. It's Gillum March on the art. It's James Tynion is co-writing it with Scott Snyder. Mm-hmm. The Gillum March art, I mean, what was he did? Before the New 52, he was doing a Poison Ivy, like kind of a Birds of Prey kind of book.
Gotham City Sirens?
Gotham City Sirens, that's right. I've liked his art since then. He does a really nice job on giving the book a nice look. The part I'm not that big on, and this is going to be probably a part that you're, this Butcher character. giant hulking brute resurrected from Gotham City of the past.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for them to throw this guy at Jonah Hex over in All-Star Western, but I'm not a big fan of this character.
Neither am I. I can understand that, but I mean, they need some big bad. To me, I see him as kind of the Bane equivalent for this Talon.
Yeah. I mean, I like the chess match between Calvin and the Court of Owls, much like you do, and I kind of wish they would concentrate on that and not feel the need to, or just have some regular Talons or something. You know, this big weird guy, I'm not a big fan of, and it detracts from the story for me.
Have there be other aspects to the Court of Owls other than the we just throw, you know, thugs at people?
Right. He could be stopping different. You know, I know he wants to stop the Court of Owls, and the Court of Owls is supposed to be this huge, powerful, secret shadow society that has infiltrated itself into, you know, Gotham City and one would assume beyond, you know, for all this time. I mean, he could be, you know, make it more of an intrigue book where he's stopping various plots of the Court of Owls and, mm-hmm. you know, and there's different aspects to it than, you know, this issue, I don't know how much I want to say that ruins it. I don't want to ruin this issue for anybody, but you know, just the main plot of here doing this break in to this location.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't doing a whole lot for me.
This struck me as something that would have pushed some of the wrong buttons for you. This whole island hideout thing that was built or whatever, I forget what they call it, Securitas Island, seems like something that if it's really been around all this time, how come we'd never heard of it before? And that tends to be the sort of thing that doesn't sit well with you when they kind of, you know, retcon something into existence that is like, how did we ever miss this?
Well, and how does Batman just leave this thing sitting around? Or, you know,
Well, they actually dealt with that in this issue, because the opening scene, in addition to providing a lot of exposition and some blatant ties to the Batman universe, you know, illustrates that, Batman is going after the Court of Owls, but in a very, you know, strategic, surgical manner versus a open warfare. And it also, that scene, I thought, underscored the fact that this Talon is, I mean, Talon the title is part of the Batman family of titles, but the character hasn't really interacted much, if at all, with any of the Batman family of characters. So he's kind of the guy out in the cold at this point, and that scene, to me, sets up that at some point, they're gonna have a meeting and hey, you know, we get what you're doing, we agree with that, but maybe you're not going about it the right way.
Yeah, and I get that. I've just, you know, the whole, I've been moving silently against them, you know, business. I'm not buying it from Batman. He's been around for a long time, and it just seems like if the Court of Owls is the kind of threat that they're built up as, and heck, they had two crossovers in Batman where they were messing with the guy. It just seems like it'd be like, hey, buddies in the Justice League, let's smack these guys down. I don't know.
Well, I think at this point he needs to find out, Batman needs to find out kind of the extent and the reach of the group to do that kind of coordinated strike so he can take it all out versus just taking out the parts he knows about and then having no clue where the rest is.
Yeah.
So I get the need for some strategy.
My basic issue with the Talon series is the Court of Owls, because as you remember, I did not like either of the Court of Owls crossovers in the Batman title either. So when all he's doing is chasing around after the Court of Owls instead of, I mean, I like the character, I like the setup, I like what he can do, mm-hmm. I like the art. I just wish they would do something other than Court of Owls, but I think a lot of people like the Court of Owls, so that's why they're doing that. It's just, it's starting to fall into the not for me category, although it's not that it's not well done, because I think it is well done. It's just, you know, the whole emphasis on the Court of Owls and how long are they going to drag that out for? What's next? Maybe I'll come back when it's the what's next phase and I get to see what are they going to do with this character if they ever get rid of the Court of Owls.
Well, or is it always going to be Talon on Talon, you know, fighting type stuff like we got in a little bit of this issue and we've certainly gotten in the past. I could see where it would definitely become kind of a one-note book in that respect for some people, particularly if you don't like the Court of Owls. You know, it will be interesting to see kind of how long this chess match goes on and if they have any plans for other stuff than that. I mean, I'm enjoying this. I mean, for me, this was a kind of a low four, better than average, but not just, you know, utterly brilliant or anything. And this was very much a kind of a middle chapter of a story, but a very good one in that respect. So I thought it was good, and I'm going to keep going with it.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 3. I liked the earlier issues a lot more than this issue. You know, they had the same kind of thing, but 6 issues in, counting the 0 issue, when it's still Court of Owls, Talon, Talon, you know, it's kind of...
But to me, that's the big arc, not the story arc. I mean, I kind of expect the Court of Owls things to be a mainstay in this book, maybe not every issue or whatever, but kind of the background thread.
Yeah, which is why I didn't order it in the first place. But, you know, for a buck a piece, I'd try it. I tried it. But the sustained pattern in the book is what's causing me not to continue with it.
I would not necessarily phrase it as sustained pattern so much as the basic premise.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work for you, yeah, it's not for you. I totally get that. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's a basic premise that at some point they could do away with and just make Talon, you know, this kind of escape artist, super spy, you know, costume guy, you know, does all this kind of stuff, and he can do other things.
What would motivate him to do those other things? And hopefully over the course of this arc, you know, however long the whole Court of Owls thing goes on, they would establish he's good at it, he likes it, and it's a natural fit, or whatever. So, that makes sense.
So let me know since you're reading it all the time, if they ever switch out of this Court of Owls business, give me a yell, because I'll check it out again.
Hopefully they'd mention that sort of thing in the solicits, too. But yeah, that makes sense. Okay, cool. Shall we move on to
Star-Lord 0.1?
Yeah, what'd you think of that one?
Well, I liked the issue. I think it was definitely a Star-Lord origin story, which is setting us up for Guardians of the Galaxy and not particularly a Guardians of the Galaxy story. I mean,
we got
a panel of them.
But that's why I think it was a 0.1 issue instead of a first issue.
Which, you know, Marvel's 0.1 program is in many ways designed to take something that would just be something tangentially related and have a different title and just kind of fold it into a main title that might have more interest and get more people to buy something. I mean, that's why when you have all these Spider-Man series being kicked off, you know, like Morbius and Venom and stuff as 0.1 issues of Spider-Man instead of this. I mean, I think it's fine. I think that it completely leaves the door open for us also to review Guardians of the Galaxy 1 when it comes out, because it's going to be, it's not like we're going to be reviewing the same book, you know, two times. It's completely different concepts.
Yeah.
Not, I won't say completely different concepts. That's not fair, but it's not the same thing. This was definitely giving backstory and setup for the Peter Quill character in the current status quo of Marvel, which is fine. I liked it. Steve McNiven's art was really nice. What I don't recall, because I didn't pull it out, but when we got that Marvel 0.1 issue a while back that had the 8-page or 6-page Star-Lord story,
yeah,
were those pages replicated in this one?
I thought they were the ones right around where the aliens were breaking into the house and he gets the shotgun. But I didn't pull it out to double check, but it seemed like those were the couple of pages.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I remember it was the same kind of thing was covered, you know, in both places.
I'd be shocked if it wasn't the same pages, because it seemed very familiar. I mean, to me, the two big takeaways for me from this issue was, I mean, we knew it was going to be more about Star-Lord than the Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, that's fine. I was surprised how they were trying to make the name Star-Lord much more literal than I thought it used to be. And, I mean, did it used to be as literal as it seems to be here?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so, I'm not all that familiar with his older appearances and stuff. The pacing on this felt a little off. I mean, we get a bit about Peter Quill's parents and how they met and stuff. It's like, okay, that's good, needed, and made sense, and certainly sets up the more literal Star-Lord aspect. We get, you know, a little of how, you know, Peter's mom dies, and that was kind of a pivotal moment for the character. It's like, okay, I get that. He gets the gun at that point. And then we get, like, a page of exposition that kind of jumps through, and then I became Star-Lord. And I'm like, wow, that seems like it deserved a little more than a page of this if the whole point was to tell us how he became Star-Lord. So it almost seemed like, let's set the scene, let's have the murder, and the butler did it. You know, the pacing was just off a little. This is something that easily could have been a couple issue storyline or miniseries to really set up the character properly. And I think it would have been very enjoyable to get particularly that last page or whatever of exposition there, you know, spelled out a little bit more.
Well, this is a book that I felt, and I was thinking of you as I was reading some of these things, because when you'll kind of pull in the comment that, you know, as you read through the book at a high level, it reads okay, and that's the way it read to me. But if I start decomposing it and looking at it too carefully, a lot of stuff starts to raise questions in my mind.
Well, let me pull out the big question.
I start to like it a lot less when I start thinking about some of these panels.
But to me, if when I stop and think about it, it completely falls apart. I mean, that disappoints me with the writer and stuff. Because there are a couple others that the more I think about it, the more impressed I get.
Yep.
And here, the gun. We're told the gun is special. But if it's so special, why did his dad leave it with his mom? Why didn't he take it with it? If it's so special, why don't we ever see it get used for anything? We find out it's a weapon of the elements. I don't know quite what that means. How did he learn how to use it? All that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a ton of aspects of this thing that I would have liked to have learned about here.
I was a little more physical with it too, which is, okay, so you've got this gun. It's this mega special space weapon. And what is it made of? Is it made of some like really lightweight, cheap plastic? Or is it like an actual substantial weapon? Because when they bring it to him in a box and say, here's your space toy. Well, a real gun, a real functional gun, I would not expect someone to mistake for a space toy.
I would expect this to be more akin to an electronic game, kind of in terms of weight, than an actual gun. Because this isn't something that fires bullets, it fires energy of some sort. So, really, it shouldn't necessarily have to weigh that much more than, like, a TV remote control, conceivably. So I could see where it's like, yeah, okay, they thought it was a toy gun. And since it won't work for anybody else, they could pull the trigger and it wouldn't do anything. So, I mean, I see where you're coming from, but that didn't faze me at all. It just seemed very convenient that it, you know, popped up when it did, and the fact he never even tried to use it, etc. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, and I wasn't looking just at a weight factor, but just like a workmanship. I mean, when you pick up something that's a real functional thing versus even a video game controller gun that's made out of plastic and mass produced and all this kind of stuff, there's pretty obvious physical differences.
Okay.
You don't mistake one for the other. It was just one thing. The other one was, you know, okay, I'm going to do a random shotgun blast and just take out two Badoon in what looked like some kind of space armor, but it's pretty feeble. Maybe it's just Badoon Lycra or something.
Or maybe it's protection against ray blasts, not physical pellets. But yeah, it did seem to be kind of a lucky shot. The other thing about this, when we finally get the cameo of the Guardians of the Galaxy, I am just not liking Iron Man's kind of space armor or whatever. And I think the two things specifically that aren't working for me is kind of that star pattern around, I guess, the arc generator, whatever they're calling that thing, and the helmet, which we don't see in the issue, but we see in the preview pages. It just looks ugly. All in all, I thought it was a decent issue for me. It's, you know, a 3 out of 5. There are a couple of things that I felt should have, I expected to be covered here, I guess, that weren't. A little more about the gun, a little bit more of, you know, how P, like, left Earth and became Star-Lord, and if he knows, you know, anything about his father and all that stuff, or, you know, what's going on.
Is this Gamora?
Yes, I believe so.
With the green hair? Do you have your Nova handy?
Not within arm's reach.
It doesn't seem like Gamora's looking the same as she was looking on the last page of Nova. Not that she necessarily needs to, but...
Okay. Different outfit, maybe?
Yeah.
I would expect them to...
Different outfits, but, you know.
Different outfit for Tony. The outfit's more important for him, too.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see what all these glowing bits are in Groot.
Yeah, that does seem a little odd. So we'll see where they go with this. It looks like fun. I'm a little curious exactly how and when Tony met up with them and all that to be in that final scene.
Well, I'm assuming we'll get all that in Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Or current issues of Iron Man, where he's in space.
I'll put it this way. Maybe I'll get it in Guardians of the Galaxy number 1.
Fair enough.
I don't read Iron Man. No, I thought it was an okay issue. It was a 3 for me. There were some things that, I mean, when I read it through the first time, I came away saying, I like that issue. But then when I started looking back at it for this review, because I would have then just moved along, right, under normal circumstances. When I started looking back at it is where some of the things just started not hanging together quite as well.
Yeah, yeah, I can totally see that.
Okay, next up we've got an all-ages book from Jimmy Robinson.
5 Weapons. This is 1 of 5. And before we start talking about it, I'm going to suggest, Bob, we be very conservative on the spoilers for this issue. There are 1 or 2 things that I think are major revelations, and I don't think we should be revealing them in the discussion. That seem fair?
Fair enough. Fair enough.
This was one that I thought was a very fun title, and the first page where it's kind of breaking the fourth wall and stuff, not a fan of that style, but the intro worked incredibly well and set certain expectations, and... You know, for an issue that's starting with a complete blank slate, to set up the school, the concept, the characters, so quickly and effectively with, I thought, a ton of payoff in this issue. I was really impressed with. I've liked Jimmy Robinson's other work, Bomb Queen and some of that stuff. But I really think this is probably the best thing he's written that I've read in ages. He really pulled out his A game here, and it shows. So I found the concept to be very intriguing. Of basically, here's a school for the children of supervillains, and we'll teach them how to, or you know, assassins and stuff, how to, you know, pick their weapon of choice and become a master at it. We get the typical, it's somebody's first day at school, so this is how we're going to introduce the character and the readers around, which is, you know, standard tactic, and it worked very well. But there was a aspect of the writing that I thought was smart and clever, but not annoyingly so. It was clear that Jimmy Robinson had really thought through the premise in the story, and not trying to show, oh, he's more clever than us or anything, but actually treating us with a lot of respect as very intelligent people who can follow what he's doing, and he's trying to play fair. And I was, again, very, very impressed with that.
I liked the issue. A lot of the stuff that really cemented it for me is stuff that I can't talk about, that are these aforementioned revelations, so I will not talk about any of those. I like the main character. I'm going to enjoy, as we go through the issue, seeing a little bit more about the intrigue at the school. It's kind of a, I'll say maybe like a more lighthearted Morning Glories.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
You know, you got the school setting, but you don't have like the deep, weird mystery thing going. I mean, there's a mystery, but it's not the same. It's not like this is a clone of that or anything. It's in a school setting, so you're going to have a comparison. And there is stuff that we're going to learn. I mean, they set up a lot of characters. You know, it's like, what's the deal with the nurse? What's the deal with the principal? You know, they give you enough little tidbits into these characters that you know something's going on.
Yeah.
But you don't know exactly what. But Jimmy does it in such a way that I want to come back for more issues to see how this plays out, so that I can see what's going to unfold. Given that it's a 5-issue series, and I don't know if it'll end up being a series of miniseries or if it's going to be a self-contained story in 5 issues. But I look forward to getting some revelations out of the next four issues after this one.
I expect that we will, and I can see where it could be left off with having a solid conclusion to this story, yet setting up future stories.
I mean, you can tell a lot of stories in this world and in this setting, but, you know, still reach a satisfying conclusion to several of the seeds that are planted here.
Yeah.
Right by the staple,
mm-hmm.
The girl who's in the, who leads the, I guess that's the special weapons club.
Yeah, exotic weapons.
That was a funny, I like that scene.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and one of the things, you know, like in the background, there's a safety sign of, you know, don't be that guy, and it's got a you know, one of those standard, you know, sign type, you know, silhouettes of a guy with a head, you know, on the ground or whatever. It's like just kind of pointing out, you know, this could be a very dangerous school or whatever. And I thought that was a fun little Easter egg sort of a thing in there.
Well, they got little things like that.
Oh, throughout.
Throughout, you know, like you're in the classroom and there's little things on the blackboard, you know, behind the knife master, and little signs in the classrooms,
mm-hmm.
You know, the knife class. One thing that I'd be interested in seeing is, there's not enough time to do it in this one, but are there regular academics in the school, or is it just everyone goes around and learns about weapons?
I would expect there would be certain math courses in terms of, you know, how to not get caught when embezzling,
yeah,
or other such useful trade skills.
And it would be nice to have, you know, some touch point to some of those. Like when you're reading a book like, I don't know, like Gladstone's, you know, or some of these other ones that are in the schools for supervillains kind of things, and they throw in like some of these different crazy classes that exist in the school, you know, just maybe have a schedule. Even that could be an Easter egg, right? You can have like, yeah, somebody has a class schedule, and you get all these zany classes that the students take. No, but I like this one. I like the setup, and I like the seeds plant. And really, what cemented it for me was the kind of what I'll call the big revelation at the last couple of pages.
Yeah, yeah, same here, because it made me rethink a few things. And this is one where I think the more you think about the story and the premise and the execution, for me at least, the more I liked it. It's like, oh, wait, he set this up, this happened. Oh, things fell into place, and it wound up with a stronger structure, not something that when I look at it, as happens with some other comics, it just kind of falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
So this was, again, very well thought out and well executed. In that regard. So for me, this was a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a high 4.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I want to see how it plays out. I think that the series as a whole has a very strong chance of being a 5 out of 5.
Fair enough. So this is definitely something I'd recommend if people are the least bit interested.
It's definitely something to check out. You know, this is highly recommended. Jimmy's a great artist, and what I like about him, and there are other artists who do this too, they don't treat the backgrounds as, let's just slap some color on, do some minimal stuff that's completely out of perspective and move on to the next figure drawing. You know, there's artists like that, and then there's artists who flesh out, and, you know, if you're actually looking at the backgrounds, you're getting an added dimension to mm-hmm. the story, because there's a lot of stuff there, and it's pretty clear that it's thought out and it's not just a bunch of random stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like when we're in the nurse's office and stuff, the layout of the office is consistent across all the shots and stuff. And it's interesting because there are a couple of panels where all you see is kind of a nondescript wall behind them or whatever, but there are others where you see certain things, and as we move around that set, if you will, they stay in the right places. And to me, it's something a lot of people wouldn't even notice consciously. But, you know, you go back to the old Rob Liefeld days where the door would switch which wall it's on and stuff. And even if you don't consciously notice it, that sort of thing can really eat away at the believability and the realism of the story. And just shoot the suspension of disbelief or whatever. Whereas here, it's so consistent, so well thought out. And so, I mean, he's, again, Jimmy Robinson, both as a writer and an artist, has thought this through. I'm willing to bet he could describe, you know, the be it the nurse's office or whatever, consistently throughout the entire run of the miniseries. And that's something that, again, just builds the, it helps cement that there is a reality here that we're dealing with. So,
yeah, absolutely.
It's nice to see somebody who takes that level of care with their art, both in terms of using the backgrounds consistently and, well, again, a few places where we don't need a background, but it's not, I don't feel like drawing one. It's like, well, at this point, there's only going to be a blank wall behind them. So,
and,
fun stuff.
You know, just to be clear with people, this is an all-ages book. A lot of the stuff Jimmy's done previously has not been all-ages. So don't let, you know, if you didn't care for some other thing just because, you know, it was, you know, kind of a mature reader's title, don't let that keep you away from this one.
This is rated T for teen.
Teen, right.
Yeah.
But it's not...
It's not a not mature M. title like Bomb Queen, is what you're
Correct.
Saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. I'm not saying... it's not all ages in terms of giving it to, like, an 8-year-old or something. That might not be appropriate. But yeah. Certainly a much wider audience than a lot of his other work. And I'm going to be curious to see both where the miniseries goes and how the sales do, because I thought this was just really well done.
What else hit your eye this week?
Obviously, there was Batman Incorporated number 8. Major revelation happened in there, and I was surprised it happened there versus the recent Death of the Family crossover. There was also the stuff we talked about, I guess, last week with what happened in Red Hood and the Outlaws, another major thing. Again, that was, I guess, technically the aftermath of the Death of the Family. It just seems funny to have a Batman event where, frankly, I didn't feel a whole lot happened, and then have some major events right after it. It just seemed a little odd. In the All-Star Western this week, in the backup feature, we start to get the Stormwatch of that era, which was kind of interesting. What else?
Yeah, that
much
is,
from DC.
it's serving to chase me away from All-Star Western.
Well, I think you like that stuff a little more pure than they're tending to do it. And, yeah. I mean, you've gone on record a number of times, and understandably so, of wanting Jonah Hex just to be Jonah Hex out in the West.
Well, you want it to be a Western. You know, it's this All-Star Western, and it's, guy's been on the East Coast. I guess he went down to New Orleans or something for an issue or two, but it's like it has not been in the West yet.
Yeah, details. Got the final issue of MacGyver, enjoyed that series. Particularly enjoyed the backup feature, which was kind of explaining how the show came to be. Got the second issue of Red 10, which is kind of a murder mystery with a Justice League-ish group of superheroes. Kind of Avengers too, I guess. That's turning out to be a lot of fun. I'm very pleased with that series. Comics Tribe is doing some interesting work.
I like Red 10. It's basically, and self-admitted, I mean, it's Agatha Christie's 10 Little Indians in kind of a superhero universe. So
yeah. And that's one where it's not the concept that makes it unique or whatever. It's the execution that's just well done.
Right.
We got another issue of Deathmatch. I'm still enjoying that series quite a bit. Now, there was an aspect of Astonishing X-Men number 59 that kind of annoyed me. At the beginning, we've got North Star talking with Jennifer Walters, She-Hulk, about the legal problems he's having, and apparently he's about to get deported from the United States for being there illegally. And she's like, "Do you even have a passport?" And I'm like, "This is the guy who was an international like skiing champion or something. So he was publicly in many, many countries, presumably having got there legitimately through a passport and airports and all that stuff. So, yes, I would think he has a passport. Did he use it the last time he entered the U.S.? Maybe not. But that just seemed a little ludicrous. And seemed to be a case where, did the people writing the story, I mean, have they read, not even all of his appearances, but, I mean, some of the major ones. Early issues of Alpha Flight, for instance. That kind of annoyed me a little. Got the second issue of Answer. That continues to be a lot of fun.
I'm liking the Ethan Van Sciver and Greg Hurwitz on Batman the Dark Knight. That was a substantive upgrade from the previous creative team, in my opinion.
I can see that. It's good stuff. I'm not a huge fan of the Mad Hatter, so some of the story aspect, it was okay. But yeah, the art was good. So how about you? What else did you read this week that was of interest?
Fall into the of interest part. iVampire. I liked iVampire and Justice League Dark. Mm-hmm. Continuing to like that. Legend of Luther Strode. I'm liking the second story arc of this one. That's definitely not a book you want to read. The Massive. We got the end of the Subcontinental story arc, which was pretty good. I started on Ravine and have not made my way through it all the way yet because that is a long, long book.
Yeah, I got that. Haven't even started it yet. It's essentially a trade paperback.
Yeah, I mean, I love the art, though. Stepan Sejic, that guy's, I just like his painted art, and I love fantasy stories. This is kind of a sweet spot for me. I kind of flipped through near the end. I haven't read through it all yet, but he's got a lot of material at the back where he has cast of characters. I did read the cast of characters page, and just so I kind of understand who they are. There's a glossary. There's a cast of characters. There's all the different people. They have long text pieces with an illustration where they talk about the different history and who some of the key players are in the world, and they talk about dragons and all kinds of things. So there's a lot of material that goes along with the main story to really flesh out the world. If you like sword and sorcery kind of stuff and dragons and fantasy and that kind of thing, definitely check it out. It's an original graphic novel. It's $14.99. Well worth it. Thought that was really well done. Kind of interesting in the getting kind of tired of it category, Westward number 4 came out, which I had been reading. It's a kind of an indie book. It's got art that is kind of like, I will say, the guy who did Surrogates. You know, that kind of a style. It's just, this is a book where you get a lot out of it. It's a very dense read, and it's the kind of thing where it's, at this point, it's so dense, it's just getting hard for me to make my way through it. I think Ken Krenkler, I think, is the author. Let me pull the book here and take a look. Ken Krekler is the writer and artist.
It's easy to go from dense to impenetrable.
Right. I would really like him to maybe get a little more concise on the verbiage in this and get a little, you know, a little crisper.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is just a lot of dialogue. And then I just, and it's black and white, so the kind of flow for it, for me, I have a little bit of a hard time making my way through it, this issue particularly, which was issue 4. That was the main stuff for this week.
So that pretty much do it then?
Yep.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss World's Finest number 10 from DC, The Age of Ultron number 1 from Marvel, and Lost Vegas number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.